Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And my co-host, Jim.
Hey, guys.
We are back. We got a jam-packed show for you today. We have two grand tournaments to talk about. We have news of some leaks regarding Sisters of Battle as well as Orcs. And, of course, the big news, the new secondaries for the 2021 chapter approved. So let's go over the news of the new units first. We were just talking about Orcs. Orcs getting a little bit tougher, apparently, to match the lore. Ray, what did we see there?
Well, we see the toughness from 4 to 4.
So we were just looking it up right before the show. Didn't look like there was any announcement of point cost changes. So your average orc boy, as well as the, I just blanked on the name, the new guys, the Snega, the Snega, whatever they're called, are all T5. Yeah, so they're all T5, still 2 attacks, still leadership 6. I'm assuming the mob rules all stay the same. I know a lot of my friends who are Marines and Chaos Space Marine players are like, are you kidding? My strength 4 bolters are now only wounding on 5s. Personally, I don't know. My thought is the t-shirt save doesn't really kind of negates this, that the T5 versus T4 is not that big of a deal. Jim, you probably have a different opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely going to make an impact. I mean, at the end of the day, because they're so low armor and they're still 1 wound, I think it'll make them slightly less, I guess, soft, but I still think the fact that they basically have no armor and 1 wound means that they'll still die to kind of mass fire just through numbers, I guess.
Yeah, because kind of like that. Also, I guess it means that we are not getting new Orc Boy models because they showed an old model in the preview.
Yeah, and we knew that exactly what we said they were going to do, they did, which is create a new profile that's better than the old Orc Boy, which is strength 5, and then sell people the new Orc Boys. So it's not a surprise that we're getting that. I think a bigger issue is a bigger deal is that like a lot of the other stuff got a bump in toughness. It sounds like Grots are going up to T3 and a lot of the characters maybe T6. So
yeah,
that's a big deal as well.
I did forget about that. That's right. They mentioned that as well. Thank you for bringing that out. Yeah, I was a little surprised by that. And also some of their weapons, especially mentioned on the higher profile orcs, the Beast Nagas are all +1 attack against vehicles and monsters. So it's like, not +1 to hit, excuse me. So they're actually hitting on 4s with shooting, which is unheard of for an orc. And I guess hitting on 2s in close combat. So that suddenly makes them a lot more interesting right off the bat. And then, of course, the big preview from Sisters of Battle. Oh my god, how many? This is another codex that reminds me a lot of the Admech one, which is how many different layers can we just stack on? So, looking at kind of like what Jakari have, where you just kind of spend some additional points and you get to upgrade your characters, and they get a all-around ability as well as a one-time use ability, which just smacked me as War Machine. You have your feet. It's like, oh, okay. But the first one that was mentioned was Word of the Emperor. And this is the all-time, this is one that's ability that's on all the time. At the start of the fight phase, you can select one enemy unit within 3 inches of this model. That unit is not eligible to fight this phase until after all eligible units from your army have done so. So once again, every faction, I guess, is getting the fight last ability, apparently, with the new wording. And then the Miraculous ability, which is the one time per game ability. While an enemy unit is within miracle range of this model, not sure what that is, each time a model in the friendly order core or character unit makes a melee attack against that enemy unit, invulnerable saves cannot be taken against that attack.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty good. The fact that it's one use only, and you're paying, say, 40 points for that, it's definitely, and you need numerical dice, I mean, it's definitely very situational, because essentially, like, you're paying 40 points, I guess, for the buff, but that's a lot of points, given the cost of Sisters characters, so
right,
that's probably almost doubling, you know, 30-40% more points per character, so I'm curious if people will end up taking it. I mean, obviously having a fight last is really good, but for, yeah.
Yeah, for 40 points, it's okay. The other thing I was thinking is we still don't know what core abilities, which units are going to be core in the codex. So if like Repentia or core, this sounds really powerful. If any of those Paragon super suits are core, that could be really good. But if it's going to be strictly sister squads, then meh. You know, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
New stratagem on the way called Faith and Fury. Hey, I've heard that before. Use a stratagem after an attempt to Sororitas unit in your army has performed an act of faith. For an attack hit roll, you can reuse the same miracle dice for that attack's wound roll. This does not count as having performed another act of faith. All this for the low, low price of 1 CP.
I think it's pretty good. I mean, basically guarantees, especially using a 4+, you're probably guaranteeing a hit and a wound.
That's what I'm trying to understand. So let's say I use, I need to roll a 5+, you know, some crazy shenanigans are going on, like a -1 hit or some sort of thing like that. So I spend the miracle dice, I'm going to use this 5 from my miracle dice pool. I spend the CP. Okay, so I now roll the 5 to wound as well. That's how it works?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And it's just one die. So it isn't like a whole unit of guys. It's just the one attack.
That's right.
Okay. So, yeah, it could be really powerful. I'm just thinking, like, get the right character with the right opportunity. That seems pretty nasty. So I was like, ugh, okay. Another one here, Defenders of the Faith, 2 CP. Use the strategy at the end of the movement phase. Select one Battle Sister squad from your army that is within range of an objective marker on the battlefield until the start of your next movement phase. Instead of following the normal rules for rapid-fire weapons in this unit shoot rapid-fire bolt weapons, making double the number of attacks. For the purpose of the stratagem, a rapid-fire bolt weapon is any bolt weapon with a rapid-fire type. Boy, that's super clear. Each time an attack is made against this unit, an auto-modified roll of 1, 2, or 3 for that attack fails, irrespective of any abilities that the weapon or model making that attack may have. So for 2 CP, you get twice as many shots and transhuman.
Yeah, but you have to be within an object range of an objective. So that's a pretty big requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you can't use it anywhere.
It seems pretty utilitarian though, because there's not a lot of tough units in the Sisters Codex. So when you're trying to hold an objective, that kind of helps a little bit, especially as when we get to the secondaries. It seems like move to center of board, win game seems to be the overall strategy still. So when you've got a lot of T3 models with one wound, this could come in quite handy. It's 2 CP though, that could bleed pretty quick. So
yeah, and I mean Sisters are T3, so I feel like you're not getting as much out of it than you do like say Space Marines.
Huh. All right, I'll see how that pans out as it comes into the wild. Invalid shield wall for 1 CP. Use this stratagem to start the fight phase. Select one Celestin's, Sacrosanct's, or Crusader's unit from the army until the end of the phase. Each time an attack is made against this unit, subtract 1 from the wound roll. Use something similar with this with Harlequins. We know this is pretty powerful. And of course, gives the new units a reason to be on the table.
Absolutely.
So, interesting. Maybe that, you know, combined. I guess you could combine the two. I don't know you would now, because you're always winning a 1, 2, or 3. So, yeah, you wouldn't bother returning. So, gives you a chance to hold 2 objectives at a time. Okay, not too bad. So, we'll see. It just seems like the power creep continues at this point with this new batch of codices. So, wild and crazy stuff there. So, those are some of the updates so far at this point. Of course, the big news was the new secondaries coming out at this point. And I didn't sure what to take when they were first announced. You know, like we kind of talked about it last week a little bit. These were written probably around Christmas time, so a lot of the changes that we've seen in competitive play probably weren't reflected on this. But there was still quite a few things that need to be changed. And so overall, do we think was there enough change to really shake things up, or is this kind of a too little, too late?
Sorry, as far as the
secondaries.
Yeah, the problem, I just don't think that the changes were enough, and the psychic ones are still pretty awful. There's very minimal changes to the primaries outside of like the 2 or 3 that they previewed. It just doesn't feel like there's enough significant change. I think the same primaries are going to be taken that were before. And also, they didn't really change any, they didn't really make any kind of core changes to how the missions are played. So I'm really disappointed in this chapter proof overall as far as the changes between the points. Points changes basically being non-existent, and the secondaries and primary missions not changing that much. It just feels like it was phoned in. So,
yeah.
So do not buy for me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those. It's a good point. You know, this good question: do you buy this? Because you kind of have to have the new missions because that's basically your tournament pack for going to events. But it's so minimal, it's like, I guess I have to buy this. You know, it's like, oh.
Could have been a...
Yeah. Like, yeah, the amount of changes are equivalent to the FAQ of changes that they released last year. So it's like, it's just like one more maybe than it was before.
Yeah, so let's go quick run through some of these changes for those who are not aware. Gage on all fronts appears to be completely unchanged. Behind enemy lines seems to be unchanged. Stranglehold. What is this now? Score 3 victory points at the end of a turn if you control 3 or more objective markers, and you also control more objective markers than your opponent controls. I have to admit, I have to double check. I think that... Right. But I don't remember that second caveat that you have to have more than your opponent. So I think that was the big thing with 6 objective games that use... As long as each of you hold 3, we can sit there, and if I chose the secondary and you didn't, then I win type thing. But I have to double check that. But I was kind of like, meh, okay. Moving over the No Mercy, No Respite. No Prisoners is a big change here. Basically, kill points based off of wounds killed. So, yay, more math, more bookkeeping. I was like, oh, God, you got to be kidding me. Basically, you get 1 point for every 10 wounds you inflict on your opponent.
It just feels like, I mean, I kind of talked about it. I've talked about it in other places, but ultimately, the issue is that all of these changes are reacting to a 6-month-old meta. And so the things that... It's actually just made armies like Jakari better.
Yeah. Well, to me, this seems like a... I don't know if this was... I don't know how to say this politically correct, so I'll just let it fly and see what happens. This didn't feel like it was a change to do anything with the meta. This felt like... This is how we used to play it in ITC. Can we just switch it to that? Yeah, that would seem to work. You know, what does this really fix? Because the old version was basically 1 point for infantry, and you got to think extra points for vehicles and monsters. So, yeah. Okay, so now you get more points for killing, you know, 3 and 4 wound custodes. Okay, yeah, that particular matchup. But then you wouldn't pick the secondary against custodes. So I don't know. To me, it's going, well, all right, whatever. To the last is basically while we stand, we fight with the FAQ changes. Did I miss something? Maybe the drone language? I'm not sure.
I think they just cleared it up a bit.
But again, I'm like, if you're only going to clear it up, why'd you change the name? So it just makes it more confusing, I think, down the road. I'm like, well, what does this do?
Well, I'm glad that it's less words because I was complaining about things like retrieve octarius data, which is just a mouthful for no particular reason. So, retrieve data, like something simple like that.
Yeah, we'll get to that one in a second here. So here we go. Investigate. So shadow operations, raise banners is still the only action that more than one unit can do in a turn. I was a little disappointed about that. I'd like to see something new and different, but didn't happen. Investigate signal. This I think has not changed. You gotta be, 6 is in the battlefield center and basically do nothing and you get points. I score 3 victory points every time you basically sacrifice a unit to do nothing while standing in the middle of the table. And I know this is hardly a sample size, but it's interesting. Our local meta here, there was a couple RTTs over the weekend, and one RTT, 4 of the top 6 were Dark Angels with blocks of Terminators. And I was like, between Oath of Moment, this secondary, I was sit there going, oh, I'm in the middle with lots of wounds at 2+ armor. Go ahead, take me off. So I think this is the one you were making fun of, Dim. Retrieve Octarius data.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe this is in replace of Deploy Scramblers.
That's right.
So one infantry unit from your army can start to perform this action at the end of the movement phase if wholly within a table quarter that has not had a service skull retrieved by your army. See below. We'll get there in a second. And is more than 6 inches away from any other table quarter. So you can't be just towing the line. You got to be significantly into the table quarter. This action is completed at the end of your turn, provided the unit attempting to do this is still within the same table quarter. If this action is successfully completed, the table quarter is said to have a servo skull. So if you do that, you get 4 points. and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, 4.3, 20 put down. But it seems to max out at 12. That's kind of weird. All right.
Yeah, so there's four quarters. Max out at 12.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. There's four quarters, but you can only get points for putting it in three quarters. Like, well, all right.
I don't understand this whole idea of like having secondaries be out of 15 points, but then like half of them you can't actually get the 15 points. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, hold on. Here we go. If you select this objective, keep a tally of data, add one to the tally each time your unit successfully completes it. Oh, okay, so that's where you get the other ones. That's how you can get to 15. So I get 1 point for putting it down, and at the end of the battle, you count up the total number. So if you put down three, you would have gotten 3 points mid-game, and then at the end of the game, you get the other 12 for a total of 15. There we go. So more bookkeeping. Awesome. What was that game? What version of the game? They had the little scrolls. You know, they're supposed to be objective markers with mysterious terrain. I mean, now I finally have a use for those things. Put those servo skulls after I take, put these in your deployment zone. I'm like, okay. Deploy teleporting homers. That looks like it has not changed at all. Although I don't remember biker units being able to do that. One infantry or biker unit from your army can start to perform this action at the end of your movement phase if wholly within 12 inches of your opponent's deployment zone. The action is completed at the end of your next command phase. Good luck. Provided the unit attempting this would wholly be within 12 inches of your opponent's deployment zone. Each time a unit from your army successfully completes this action, score 2 points. Wow. You score 4 points instead if the unit is completed the action while wholly within your deployment zone. What? So with the shorter boards, if you're within 12 inches of your opponent's deployment zone. Oh, I'm reading it completely wrong. Sorry. I thought I had to be 12 inches deep of my opponent's deployment zone. I'll be like way deep. I was like, I'm like on the back edge. That's a waste of time. So yeah, you can be in no man's land and start planning these things down.
Yeah, you get the bike so you can start it before you're actually in it.
That's that. All right. Well, I might get some play. Assassination, 3 points per character, and a bonus point if you kill the warlord. So that has not changed. Don't believe Titan Hunter has changed. 9 points for killing one. I take that back. Score 4 points for killing one, 9 points for killing two, and 15 points for killing three Titanic models. That seems like I guess that'll work. Bring it down. One. That seems like nothing's changed since the FAQ. Same thing with the Boar the Witch. We get to Warpcraft now. That has not changed since the FAQ. Warp Ritual has changed. This is kind of the trend with all these going on here. Long story short, you still have to do the psychic action, which is Warp Charge 3. Psychic character from a unit must attempt to perform this action if they're within 6 inches of the battlefield center. But the interesting thing before, you had to do this 3 times, you got 15 points, but if you came up short, you got no points. They now give you points for at least trying hard. So at the end of the battle, score 3 points if you completed the ritual once, 7 points if you completed the ritual twice, and then 12 points if you finish it 3 or more times. Psychic Veil, similar to that, except the same nonsense. You have to be within 6 inches of your opponent's battlefield edge. That's what I was thinking of with that last one with the bikes. So yeah, you got to be super deep in your deployment zone and sacrifice all your psychic actions. And then last but not least, Psychic Interrogation. Every time you attempt this, they extended the range, though. It's up to 24 inches of a visible enemy character. You get 3 points every time you pull this off. So I guess the nice thing about this one is you can do this over and over and over again to the same character. Whereas, like Assassination, once you kill him once, you only get the points that one time. I don't know. I was thinking about this, but I thought it would be really cool, especially with Grey Knights and Thousand Suns coming out soon. It'd be a lot cooler to see something in the Codex where they simply say you can perform a psychic action, as well as still complete your, still use your psychic powers normally. Just like there's a lot of units out there that can still shoot and perform an action in the same turn. I think that would have been a hell of a lot more useful than this.
Yeah, the lack of ability to do other things with psychic secondaries just makes them completely useless, especially because you're paying usually 90 plus points for that unit. For Habitat to be basically not effective for 4 turns just means it's just really bad. Really, and the fact that it can be denied too makes just really bad.
I forgot about
really
that.
Bad mechanic. So
yeah,
you can fail it and it can be denied. So
yep,
it's just a really bad mechanic.
It's kind of like with the old psychics. That was always the problem with all the pre-smite days. You know, it's like there's a chance it can fail, it can chance to be denied, and then you basically you're firing a heavy bolter. Well, I'd rather just shoot a heavy bolter. The other thing I also feel bad with this is there's not that many elite choices or other, so pretty much all your psychers are locked in the HQ slots. So you're kind of stuck, you know, you're wasting not only that, like I said, 90-ish points, but yeah, that slot just gets hogtied into performing an action. It seems weird.
Yeah, it's just I really just don't like the action mechanic in general. I think it's too restricting. So
yeah, so little hopefully some changes there down the road. But any builds off the top of your head that you can think of that are ripe for major change? Because I don't think anybody got particularly nerfed by this.
Not really, but I think the issue is that it's just I don't know. I still don't think they're gonna get taken.
Yep.
So if the goal was to make them more popular, then I think it's a failure.
Yeah. Unfortunate. All right. So, well, the good news is for those who have not gotten out to the tournament scene because of COVID safety issues, you haven't missed much. So the 2021 season, the missions are about the same. So,
are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR Cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in the cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy, the boxes help protect your models, and when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com, and when you place your order, be sure to mention the Exterminatus podcast.
We'll just move on. So let's talk about some action on the tabletop. We did have two events over the weekend to talk about. The first one is in Copenhagen GT, which is actually in Tastrup, Denmark, which I'm assuming is a suburb of Copenhagen. Ray, what's your top five look like there?
In fifth place, Nicholas Larson with Deathwatch. Fourth place, Juan Navarro playing Chaos. Third, Sune Krarup playing Chaos. Second, Martin Butch playing Necrons. And in first, Alexander Zugov playing Adeptus Astartes.
Pretty interesting mix of the top five there. Let's take a look at that top list. The winning list looks something like this. Ultramarine Successor Squads. He took Long-Range Marksmen and Master Artisans and a Spearhead. HQ slot, he's got a Librarian. Upgrade the Chief Librarian with a Jump Pack. So ideal for all those Psychic Secondaries we were just talking about. Captain on Bike. Unit of 10 Vanguard Vets. 2 Relic Contemptors. 2 Redemptor Dreadnoughts. With Gatling cannons and 3 units of 3 attack bites, 2 units of 5 devastators, all with multi-meltas, and a drop pod. Sounds like the perfect list to take on an airplane. Just would like fit in your overhead compartment. But it then goes back to this seems like another list that seems to eschew objective secured. Just bring what you got. And he starts the game with 7 CP. Jim, what do you think of the list?
I mean, it seems pretty straightforward. I'm curious to see how big was the event.
30 people.
Give me one sec.
Yeah, so not much to say about it, just because the event was pretty small. So it's hard to say whether, you know, it would survive in the larger meta, especially against some of the other boogeymen, especially with AdMech out now being quite strong. So
yep,
I'm curious what his win path was to.
I can tell you that in a second, actually. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, this might take me more a minute. So he played Juan Navarro in the final round, and that was against Demons. He was the Chaos player. And looks like he took Selesky, a pack of 30 Demonettes, 2 Fiends, followed by an Emperor's Children squad, a patrol, excuse me, of Dark Apostle, Lucius the Eternal. Lucius the Eternal, who takes him? Block of 10 Noise Marines, a block of 10 Terminators, all in a Terox Thermite, Termite, I can never get that word out. Chaos Terax Pattern Thermite is what I'll try to say. And then last but not least, he had a Death Guard patrol featuring the Noxroll Plague Company, featuring the Tallyman, Lingling Playcaster, 20 Pox Walkers, 5 Blightlord Terminators, and a Foul Blight Spawn. So that's what he was fighting on the last final table.
Yeah, so nothing too crazy.
Yeah, and before that he played the Death Watch player, which was all Vanguard Vets with Lightning Claws and Storm Shields to rally Contemptor. So a lot of Dreadnought and Dreadnought action, and then another Terminator squads. So we're seeing a lot of, at least at this particular event, a lot of very compact armies. So it just sounds like he almost played like 3 mirror matches in the last 3 rounds. Makes me wonder, just take a look at the Necron player. Who did he play to sneak into second place? He played Juan in round 4, and then Sune Karup in third. So yeah, he did a decent run. He did not sneak in, so I take that back. All right. With that, we go back to statesides to Kansas. at the Rocky Top GT, Ray, what's the top 5 look like there?
In 5th place, Daniel Hester's playing 4th, Tarzan playing Death Skulls. 3rd.
Headed in for the jungle, thank you.
3rd is Seth Piper playing Necrons. 2nd, Jamie Paris playing Space Wolves. And in 1st, Stephen Crowley playing Drakari.
Let's take a look at the Chikari list real quick for Stephen Crawley coming in first. See if any big changes here. I think everybody from the Chikari says we're waiting for the big Nerf bat to come, and so far, nothing yet. Starts with Cult of Strife. Surprise, surprise. And a triple patrol. Looks like, yeah, triple patrols. Succubus with Precision Blows and Tolerate and Trip Witch. And make him a Show Stealer, so that's all the fun. How many attacks can we pile into one character? The other one has a competitive edge with the Dark Lotus Toxin and the Razor Flail, so that'd be the other how many attacks can we pile on a character. 1, 2, 3 units of 10 Witches, 1 unit of 10 Reaver Bikes, and then the second attachment is Cabal the Blackheart, featuring Archon, 2 units of 5 Cabalite Warriors, Bare Bones, and 2 units of 10 Incubi, all the Raiders, which are 5 of them. All with Dark Lances and Grizzly Trophies. Last but not least, he's got a custom Dark Technomancers. What surprise. Drazar, 3 units of 5 racks, all with Liquefire Guns, and another Dark Lance Grizzly Trophy Raider. So 6 Raiders altogether. I have to say, I was really surprised Dark Technomancers did not get some sort of adjustment. I find that very strange.
Well, we haven't seen a like, there's rumors of like a summer FAQ, which we haven't seen, so I'm curious if we're gonna ever get that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, there's rumors of that coming around. Apparently there's quite a few topics to be explored there. So yeah, that'd be curious to see what that has to bring to the table.
Yeah, I definitely think there needs to be some changes.
Looking at a couple top players outside of the top 5 at 5 from this particular event, Thomas Bird coming in 8th with Ultramarines, Horton Doughton coming in 13th with Adeptus Sororitas, which I think is, how is he not playing Chaos? That's just crazy. But Horton's playing Sisters. How about that? Mike Twitchell coming in 16th with Death Guard, former 11th Company co-host Alan Hernandez coming in 22nd with Arlequins, and one more find. There he is. Mark Perry, not having his best outing. Went 2-3, 48th place in this particular event. And of course, congratulations to Dean Pritchard with Dark Angels going 2-4. Nope, I take that back. He's not the wooden spoon. There's another page. Check that out. That would go to Carl Stuck with Salamanders going a perfect 0-6 on the weekend for the Wooden Spoon. All right. So any Ray and Jim, have you guys seen the Adback Codex at this point?
I have not seen it fully.
Okay. So it is out in the wild. It came out it's a Saturday. And so we'll get our hands on that. I don't want to make any presumptive talks about it. But the number one thing I've been hearing from AdMech friends is very complicated, which I thought the Necron Codex was complicated. This thing seems like another level above that, which could be a topic in itself. This is why are we making these rules so hard to play? But we'll take a look at that once we have our hands on that codex. So let's jump over to the ITC Top 10. As mentioned, a little bit of shifting around since our last show. 10th place, Mark Hurdle with 943 points. 9th place, Jason McKenzie. 8th place, Kyle Perry. 7th place, Marshall Peterson jumps into the top 10. 6th place, Seth Piper, who we talked about earlier today, came in 6th. 5th place, Junior Flahey. 4th place, Mark Esch. 3rd place, James Keeling. Colin McDade jumps into the 2nd spot. And your top player for another week in a row is none other than Sean Naden. So he's in the top spot with 1,229 points, almost a 200-point... let's close, take that back. Was a 150-point lead over Colin McDade. All players in the top 10 do have 6 events, with exception of Mark Hurtle. So there we are. So guys, any big hopes for what could come out this week other than that big FAQ?
I hope that we get some sort of information on what's coming for 40K, because we don't really, it feels like it's not really clear what the future of the, like, I guess, roadmap is as far as FAQs and codexes and stuff. So we got quite a bit of pre-orders this week with Sisters. I was surprised Sisters was on pre-order already, so next week. So hoping that means that they're trying to push or accelerate the release schedule a little bit more. And hopefully maybe by like July, we'll have Orcs out and maybe the next Warzone as well and be almost caught up.
I would agree. I'm a little concerned too, because obviously they're going to put a big push on Age of Sigmar 3.0. And I hope they don't take their foot off the gas at 40K to get caught up at the same time. Ray, what are your thoughts?
I'm hoping to hear an update. The codexes that they've now admitted that they've kind of pushed to the sidelines, which are Grey Knights and Thousand Suns. These are, at this point, they've admitted they were books to be out by now. So I'm hoping to hear an update on when those, as opposed to first come after.
Kind of framing between what both you guys are saying. I want to see what's coming out after that, but I also want to know when are things coming out. Sisters seem to be on the precipice of release based on the pre-orders, but again, nothing definite. Orcs are coming soon. What is soon? Before August or before next week? I don't know what that means. So yeah, there's definitely, yeah, when they flat out admit, yeah, those codices should have been released by now, I'm like, okay, you're 5 behind, 6 behind. And then there's all those codices we haven't even heard a drop of information about. So, you know, Chaos Space Marines. I mean, basically, Thousand Suns might be only our second Chaos book at this point. So.
Yeah. I'm really confused about the, I guess, the release order. Because if Thousand Suns and, I guess, Grey Knights were supposed to be out by now, and that's why they have the new points in the chapter approved, then shouldn't Orcs and Sisters have also been out by now, and shouldn't they have also had their new points in the chapter approved? In which case...
It depends on whether or not they just sidelined the Grey Knights and the Thousand Suns as opposed to push things back.
Well, that's my point. Sorry. I'm confused as to how the release order has changed, because it would seem to me that if Thousand Suns and Grey Knights have points and new points, their new points and their new codex in the chapter approved, and they're supposed to come up after Sisters and Orcs, then Sisters and Orcs should also have their new points in the chapter approved. If you just think about the order of how things get released. So I think that's correct. So I'm just confused as to why that's not the case.
No, I'm with you. I'm like so rather confused and how that got. I'm also confused what exactly derailed this at this point. So I know everybody said it's COVID and there's a lack of shipping containers and all this stuff. I'm going, yeah, but no. So something, so I don't know. It's definitely affecting things at this point, and there were some workarounds they could have done, at least get you by, and they could have been done easily through the website. So I'm not sure.
Digital codexes.
Yeah, you had a really good idea at one of your other shows, and could you repeat that again just for everyone else's purposes here? That was a really good idea.
Basically, they just introduced digital codexes. It's really simple. but I think if they decouple the points from the background, points and data sheets should be decoupled from background. So they should be releasing like Eldar army books and Chaos Space Marines, whatever. And that's just like background and painting. And then maybe Crusade rules, if you want to throw them in. And then the actual data sheets and points and stratagems and all that stuff should be digital for all the books so that they can be updated on the fly. And they should also be available in the app as a codex. You should really just get a digital version of your codex.
And I think that kind of goes hand in hand. If you're buying the data sheets electronically, you know, what is the vehicle for that? Is that a PDF or is it through the app? You have probably both. If you're buying the physical codex, which gives you all the artwork and all the other stuff that has the same code system they've got now, so you can download it into the app, Wunderbar. They both work really well, and it seems a much more... I thought it was just a lot more seamless and allows a lot for editing. That's one thing I think has been lacking in the last few codices is some of the background seems to be watered down a little bit. And we haven't seen a painting guide in forever. So that'd be kind of cool to see some of this stuff come back again.
Yeah, and like it's not like the lore changes much book to book. Like I bet you if you read all the lore from the 8th edition Eldar, like Chaos Space Marine book or... Thousand Sons book, it's gonna be very similar to the current one.
That's actually a complaint I've got is it seems like the lore kind of got stagnated all of a sudden. You know, it seemed to be moving for a while and then it kind of slowed down again. I was like, oh, you know, the big news out of I forgot which Dark Angel codex it was, you know, Luther escaped. Oh, cool, that's creating all this uproar and nothing's happened about it yet, but got me interested. Maybe I should read these little tidbits on the side and actually read the lore once in a while. So I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, if you have these little tidbits that kind of add to things or explain things a little bit further, that'd be really cool. But there's only so many pages in the book they can put in there. So no, I think it was a great way to great compromise. So very cool idea. All right, gentlemen, we will track the rest of this during the week. Just a reminder, the Ocotillo Onslaught, our GT for this fall, which will be November 6th and 7th. Tickets are on sale as we speak. Head on over to BCP app. You can order your tickets through that. So once again, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.